everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peak, and I have with me today Joshua Treadaway on Zoom. Say hi, Josh.
Hello.
So this is episode 289. We're getting right up there, close to 300 now. We're zooming right along. Before I talked to you this morning, I was watching Star Wars Meg on YouTube of all of her fan theories and all the different websites that she's watching and the little, you know, backstory comics and the, I guess the Boba Fett comic is getting ready to come out or has come out. Or is getting ready to come out, I think. The you were reading the what is the newest book of the High Republic? Or no.
That's actually an old series.
So the High Republic, my stepson actually read. I'm confusing conversations, but yeah, my stepson Jared came over Saturday and he was like, "Dude, I read the High Republic. It is bonkers." And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "It is awesome." And I was like, "Okay, cool." I said, "But I mentioned to him, I said, are you looking for something new? Because he's big into the Star Wars stuff too. And he's having his kids watch them from the beginning up through the sequencing."
Right. So, we had that conversation.
Yeah. So he, I told him you'd read Thrawn. And I said, you got to check out Thrawn. And he's like, which one was Thrawn? I said, the blue guy with the red eyes. And I go, oh, that dude. I said, yeah, there's a whole series that Treadaway read that he said was really awesome. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll have to check that out. So lots of good stuff out there. There's a couple of things that she mentioned that, because I've missed several weeks of watching her, and she puts out one a day. So I'm like, Jesus.
One a day? Good Lord. What kind of content?
I don't know how she comes up with this kind of content, but it really made me think on the fact that there is that much content that's going to be available soon with these shows, and the fact that you and I do this, you know, Jedi talk between two Joshes. This sort of opens up to right in our wheelhouse of things that we talk about. And I thought maybe I could do a separate one that's like, I'll do a solo one of some other BS that I'm watching, and then you and I can do the one of this. So I don't know, just a thought. She did mention something that was kind of cool. Somebody's working on they've come out with a book or a screenplay or something that's called A Queen's Hope. And it's supposed to be Padme's story point of view from Clone Wars.
Okay.
And it was kind of an interesting idea. I thought, wow, that's a new avenue to go down. And, you know, I know Natalie Portman has been open saying that she'd be willing to play Padme again if it came up to it. So that's kind of cool. I also saw that like I assumed, I don't know why I assumed it, but I assumed that the Bad Batch was going to be a live action kind of like the others have been, but it is going to be animated. So it's going to be a lot easier to make. I mean, they're apparently cranking it out as fast as they can. They're going to use the same guy that was doing the voices for the other three in the past. He's going to do them in the future ones, which is great because then you have continuity.
Yeah, continuity, exactly. Well, the thing is, I mean, to be perfectly honest, for the Bad Batch to really be done properly, it's got to be animated.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree because there's so much going on and it would be cost prohibitive for them to try to do a huge battle scene using live action everything. I mean, that's just, you know, you're talking CGI and you're talking all kind of crazy expense. When you're animated, you could just go, here's a story and it's going to be a lot of stuff happening. And it's easier to tell that story animated.
Well, we both discussed it. I mean, when watching Rebels and watching Clone Wars, you didn't really even think you were watching an animated series.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did such a great job with it. I mean, they can do it that way. And you don't
Clone Wars was, to me, like, especially the early seasons, was real. The characters were very blockish looking and very two-dimensional, even though they were operating.
They probably weren't sure what kind of feedback they were going to get.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, because they were, it was like a rudimentary kind of, to me, it was more like a nod to like samurai comics, the way they were trying to do them very hard-lined and two-dimensional with their stares and glances and like flashes of things happening on their face, you know, and it was like, all right, what are you doing? You know, but as they developed the show further, especially in the last season, I mean, that was like a motion picture. I mean, it was so detailed and God, I mean, if anybody hasn't seen that, go back and watch the last season of Clone Wars, just so you can see my girl Ahsoka Tano break out the dual blades and be a badass. Holy cow. I mean, gets me excited every time I think about it. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing all of this interaction. I'm looking forward to seeing all the characters that are come up from these shows. You know, I know there's a lot of political talk right now with Cara Dune leaving the show and Gina Carano apparently on Twitter making some statements that pissed a lot of people off. And I don't agree with any of it. I mean, I'm of the opinion that a lot of times people's opinions are their opinions. And sometimes when you're in the public eye like that, you need a publicist to publish what you think you say. It's sort of like Spin City. You need someone to go, what you really meant was this. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. You know, I mean, she just kind of screwed up her career.
She spoke from her heart, but at the same time,
it was the wrong approach.
Right.
The wrong delivery, I guess you'd say.
I don't agree with what she said. I agree with her right to say it.
Yeah. I mean, it is that idea of, you know, is the First Amendment protected or is it not? And when it becomes someone whose opinion may be deemed as toxic to a lot of people, then maybe not. I mean, we talked about that with, you know, President Trump and the fact that he would often say things that polarized people. You know, I don't know that it's ever safe to make a comparison to the Jewish Holocaust in any situation. I mean, that was an atrocity across the board. And I really think that's where she crossed the line the most.
I mean, it's like that skit. Remember the skit in Saturday Night Live when she said that the Holocaust wasn't real and the board lit up behind her?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
You didn't see that skit with Mike Myers and Heather Locklear?
I didn't see that one.
Talking about they were trying to. It was an infomercial. They were trying to sell a pasta maker.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, I didn't see that one.
One was like you couldn't buy it cheaper off a drunken Indian, and then the whole board lit up.
That's terrible.
It's a great skit, though. It's a great skit. You should watch it.
Oh Lord,
it's one of my top five. Anyway, go ahead.
I understand. Like, it's one of those things where I'm not happy about it, but I understand. But it's also kind of like having a friend that you invite to a party who starts saying things when they get drunk and you're like, all right, it's time for him to go. You know, it sort of reminds me of that. And sometimes I'm that friend. So, I mean,
I know I've been that friend.
Let's just call it what it is. Greg may or may not have gotten drunk here and started on a tangent like that. And I listened to him. And after about 30 minutes, he goes, wow. He goes, thank you for listening to me. And I just realized I said a lot of really nasty stuff. He's like, I don't even know where that came from. I don't know why I did it. And I said, it's okay.
Well, he's actually part of the reason why I stopped posting like political rants on Facebook or sharing political rants, because he came off on me at one time and he said some things that were a little hurtful, but it were true.
Yeah.
But the next morning he texted me personally and said, I'm sorry, I was drunk. I apologize. I didn't mean that. I love you. And then he deleted his and I deleted the whole thing. And that's part of the reason why I quit doing the whole political rant thing, because I realized what I was doing was basically what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, this is uncharted territory for us, because none of us have ever been very political growing up, and there's no reason to ever be political growing up, honestly. And the only reason that we are now is because I think we're all sucked into the same bait. We're all baited with hot button topics and things that we think are worthy of talking about. And they are worthy of talking about. But, you know, I've said it in the past and I'll say it again. If any of the goodness came from Donald Trump being president, is that we care more about politics now than we do the Kardashians.
Thank God.
You know, there's a generation of kids out there that are suddenly like, maybe I should be paying attention to what affects my life.
Yeah, because I mean, up to this election, I'd never even voted.
Yeah. So, you know, it's an opportunity for a lot of people to suddenly go, okay, what does it take to be in office? What does it take for me to make change? What does it take for me to take a stand? What does it take for me to live a life worthy of, once it's time to go run for office, that I can be that person that no one finds any scrutiny with? And the fact that they can go back so many years and go, oh, well, 10 years ago you said this. I mean, come on.
Right. That's the new thing. Like, you know, I mean, all these people, I have a Twitter account, but I never use it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know I tag you in stuff. I tag you in Star Wars stuff.
And a couple of TikTok things here and there.
The TikTok things are kind of cute, because they're usually Star Wars related also.
Right.
But anyway, moving forward, right. I watched a lot between last week and this week. I'll just show you. Look at my, you see, well.
Hold up. You got a glare. Hold on. Okay. I got you. That's a lot of notes.
I made a lot of notes. I watched a lot of stuff.
Then I'll just sit quietly and interject. So go ahead and start.
The one thing I want to talk about the most is WandaVision episode 7. Okay. Uh-huh. WandaVision is holy cow. Like not what I expected, especially coming from the first three episodes, which I told you, I thought sucked.
I remember, and I told you, just give it a little time. I know something's coming. Something's coming.
And not only
did something come, but it came hard.
I'm patient, and I waited it out, and I'm like, okay. Because like I told you before, I'll watch a bad movie because somebody talked him into that pile of money. And same thing with this. I mean, Disney and Marvel are not, there's no dummies at the executive level where they're going, that seems like a really crappy idea. Go with it. I mean, they're going to want something that's a big payoff. And this is, without a doubt, one of the coolest episodes out there. I mean, it's been a week now. If you haven't watched it, just go watch it and then listen to the podcast because we're going to spoil the crap out of it right now. So the big story is Agatha Harkness.
Yep.
Agatha, Agatha Harkness.
I didn't see that coming at all. It came out of nowhere. Didn't see it at all.
I did the Google search and I was like, holy crap. Like she's like a real
badass,
a real powerful witch.
Yeah.
One of the oldest entities.
She's Wanda's tutor.
She's one of the oldest entities out there. She's
older than Doctor Strange.
She's older than Doctor Strange. She's
apparently like 10,500 years old.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of stuff about her basically. And she's dead. Yeah. So there's all this stuff about her, apparently like having a direct effect on all sorts of superheroes and supervillains along the way. Not to mention the fact that she has a son named Nicholas Scratch that we see in Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. Just throw that out there. there's all sorts of tie-ins all across the board. And there's this like ever-present idea that Magneto may show up in this universe because we talked about the fact that the new Quicksilver was Magneto's son. And, there is this tie-in between a battle of... I've read it online of the Scarlet Witch fighting off against Magneto and ultimately defeating him. But there's this.
It's actually not, but that's not Magneto. That was actually Mephistopheles. It was a demon version. I mean, it was like a Marvel version of a demon that was kind of like the devil.
Okay.
His soul was split into different parts, and actually part of his souls, whenever she created the twins, were part of his soul.
Oh, interesting. So, okay. There's a big reveal at the very end of the episode that shows Agatha Harkness, and it says, Agatha all along. And it shows her introduction into the season when it was black and white, her going from color to being a black and white character, her changing things as they go along. This episode 7 is done in a office/Modern Family/Parks and Rec kind of thing where they're talking to the camera and they're breaking the fourth wall. A lot of the stylizing of the episode is done that way. She's extremely tired in the beginning because she expanded a ton of energy in the last one, just making her little bubble that much bigger, or I guess it's not really a bubble, it's a hexagon, making it that much bigger, enveloping all of Westview and several characters in the process. Plus, we have the additive of Monica Rambeau coming back into the Hex.
So, and remember who she was, though. Like, actually, like, being, I think the suit blocked her from losing her memories.
Maybe. But the fact that, she had a discussion before when she came out that because she had gone in and come out twice, that it wasn't her. It was the fact that every one of her cells had been broken down and rebuilt through the Hex so that she was in a way sort of being absorbed through the Scarlet Witch's powers. And she was basically starting to absorb some of those powers. And they said, we don't know what's going to happen to you if you go back into it, which was her plan of building this giant tank-like thing that's supposed to be impervious to the powers of it and wearing the suit and everything else. And then when she realizes that it just throws that thing out of the way, she's like, I'm going for it. Like she just made a spur of the moment decision. And I guess she thought, what do I have to lose at this point?
And I'll tell you, going through the Hex, that was one of the coolest scenes.
Yes.
Since Stargate.
Yes. So when she comes to the other side, her eyes are glowing blue. And there is a sense that she has some of the powers. Like she has absorbed some of the power of it. There is the moment where she confronts the Scarlet Witch and there's the thing where she throws her up in the air and then Monica basically blocks it and lands on the ground. And when she does, there's like blue lightning that shoots from her. And I'm like, whoa, 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 time out. What's it? is she like force positive powers or something? I mean, what's going on here? It was really cool. Plus I love the interaction of Vision hanging out and like doing the interview process and then him going, wait, what am I doing?
I'm going to go to my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love the interaction that he was having and the whole storyline there. But I think the Monica Rambeau thing to me is way more compelling. I don't know why, but there's something more there. Plus, I don't know if you noticed at the end of the credits or as the credits were going, they had like an extended scene that was like a...
Yes, I actually did watch that. I guess I just didn't pay attention. I left it running.
Yeah.
And I actually caught the end of it too.
Yeah, so the guy playing Quicksilver, you know, he comes over and he's like, oh, Snooper's going to snoop, you know? And it's like, wait, what? Like, okay, so you and I talked about the fact of... You know, was Pietro brought in here as Quicksilver, as a different character? Is that her doing? Is that an outside influence? And then there's the question of, okay, is Agatha the reason he's there?
Now I think it's Agatha. I think Agatha. Here's my thought process. I did a little digging, not as much as you probably did, but I did a little digging. So Wanda's or the Scarlet Witch's powers, according to the comic books, were magnified immensely when Agatha died trying to destroy Vertigo, which was one of the most powerful witches in New Salem.
Mm-hmm.
And when she did, she died, and Wanda absorbed all the powers from all the witches in New Salem. And that's how she created the power to create the kids.
Ooh.
And so my thought process is this. Every single time you hear about Wanda using that much power, Agatha kind of shows up. So I think because she used the power to create the world that Vision is back and bring him back to life, that brought back Agatha because it's part of her power.
There's also an image that somebody did where they went back and started watching some of the old Marvel movies. And there's a movie with Doctor Strange where he's in the time capsule or time council. And there's all these little, you know, hexagon looking things behind the council where they're speaking to him, and there's one missing. And then apparently in the basement of Agatha's house, there's one in the corner. And they're like, did she use the time capsule to then transport herself here so that she can now interact with Wanda?
It's possible, but I think I'm going to guess that Quicksilver's for Petro's is from Agatha.
Yeah. I think so too.
Cause it threw Wanda off her game now. Cause
yeah.
Amanda Harkness wants her power back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and she has powers, apparently. I mean, she's still able to manipulate some things.
She has some powers. But this woman was like end-all, be-all.
Yeah. Of course, I like the fact that they're doing the cut. I don't know if you even noticed the slight subtleness of the color coordination of Wanda's powers are red and Agatha's is purple.
Oh, I know Wanda's is red. I never really paid attention to Agatha's purple.
Yeah, so if you watch it again, like when they go in the basement, everything has a purple tinge to it. Even when she starts speaking to Wanda down there and she does something to show her vision, it's all in this purplish looking. I was like, that's kind of, I like that. It's a little subtleness to it. But even the fact that the commercial that was going on in the show yes. was tailored to the Nexus, which they call it, which is what they call that hex. And the Nexus is also that multiverse parameter that they call, you know, this, that thing that they show at the very end when the credits are starting to run. It's got all the colors and it's basically showing how she built everything with the magical powers of the flower and the setting and the, but it takes you through a thing that sort of reminds me of Doctor Strange and also Interstellar. Like there's this interdimensionalness of it where there's a possibility of a multiverse and the possibility of it being in and out of time and space. And they did all of that visually in that one little sequence where the credits are rolling. And I was like, damn, that's beautiful. Holy cow. Somebody really went out of their way for this, which is cool because like we're talking about, it's always better when there's fans of the thing making the thing. Because then they put in all these little Easter eggs along the way. And you're like, oh, thank goodness. This is so much better because you guys are fans. So as much as I wanted to poo-poo on this show when it first started, it's turned out to be a home run. And it's tying all kinds of things together. I mean, I saw where they're talking about the next, the next Spider-Man coming out with the multiverse, and somebody had done some fan fiction stuff where they tied in WandaVision into this, and I was like, oh, hold on, time out.
Well, I mean, you've got the time portal sitting there, like you said, in Agatha's basement.
Her basement, yeah.
And then you've got the whole idea of the multiverse being done already in the old school Spider-Man.
Yeah, and with Nicholas Scratch being her son, they could pull in Sabrina. I mean,
yeah,
all this stuff could happen. I mean, geez, it's so cool. It's so cool. So cool. Let's see. Did I touch on everything I wanted to hit? Oh, and also her Munsters theme when she's doing her backstory.
Yes, yes.
And the Wizard of Oz, you know, the "I'll get your dog too." She's like, "And I kill Sparky too." I thought all that was great because it's all in that same themology of her, you know, having this back story of, you know, everything is like the shows that she watched on TV growing up. Even the kids playing their video games, their controllers kept switching. And
yeah,
I like the fact that even Tommy was like, "It's so loud in my brain." Like, he's starting to give her indication of, like, you know, apparently he gets powers like Xavier, like Dark Phoenix.
Well, supposedly, now I don't know how they're going to run it here, but supposedly the twins are very, copies of Wanda and Pedro. So that's the comic book storyline.
Okay, I can see that.
You've already seen one of them have the speed powers during the Halloween episode.
Yeah, but I think that the mind power is going to be more than her. I think it's going to be I think Tommy's ability to control things with his mind is going to be more like the Dark Phoenix. I think it's going to be like, holy cow, grab your seats, this is about to take off, kind of. Yeah. So anyway, very cool. Very, very neat idea. I had another thought. What was it? Something about, is Agatha possibly there? Did Wanda create Agatha? Did Wanda bring Agatha in this unconsciously because she needs to figure out a way for Vision to live outside of this hex?
I don't think so. Like I said, when I did my little slight digging, I think that it's based on the fact that because she used the power that she had inside of her, which came originally from Agatha and all the witches in New Salem, that when she used that power, she drew the spirit force of Agatha Hargrave to her.
Okay. Because of the magnitude of the power she used. Because
of the use of the power she used, and that she was drawn to it, because Agatha's out there looking to try to come back to corporeal form.
Okay, so do you think they're going to somehow try to use their powers together to bring Vision back to life in the real world? I mean, that's kind of my theory is either they're going to bring him into the real world as a grouping of people, or he goes away. And I don't think he goes away. I think he's too much of a light character, and there's too many options for his character to grow and develop and do other things. They're going to figure out some way to bring him back. That's just my thought.
Well, my thought is this, and I thought about kind of things like that. See, the thing about Agatha is you don't know if she's good or bad. Yeah. Like in her history, she's fought for good and she's fought for bad.
Yeah, the Salem witches, she instigated the Salem witch trials so that she could gain their powers and get rid of the ones that were the weaker ones, because she felt like it was a culling was good so that the stronger witches could excel.
You couldn't protect yourself, then you weren't worthy of her training you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very interesting story, and I like the fact that they're tying all of this in together. I mean, it's a very integral web. I mean, and there's a ton of people out there that are way smarter than we are, who read a lot more and do all their research.
100%. Like, I mean, I did a little YouTube deep dive, kind of, you know, to watch a couple videos to get the idea of what she was and where her character origin is and all this.
Yeah. If anybody out there thinks that we're super smart on this stuff, we're not. we're just fans of the show. And we're like, hey, this is pretty cool. I like learning this stuff. And it's fun to talk about. I mean, if anybody's interested in this kind of stuff and you want to talk about it, please let us know. Cause man, we're into it, but also we don't know as much as most people. So what we're learning as we're going.
Absolutely. It would be great to have someone who, you know, has a little bit more of the knowledge of reading the comics as they came out back in the day.
Yeah.
Cause like I was reading, like I said, with the video and everything, I mean, apparently her, the origin, well, not the origin, but the beginning of Agatha was introduced in the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
She was, yeah, so, she was sought out to be the nanny for Franklin, who is the child of Reed Richards. And,
yeah. So Reed Richards, that's another rumor I saw, is that Reed Richards may pop in to this season. Recast. I mean, you know, they've talked about the fact that I forget the actor who's supposed to be playing him, but that he could make an appearance as Reed Richards in this to tie it in together that way, which would then spur off their new Fantastic Four. What is this? The third reboot of Fantastic Four?
Yeah, probably third.
Yeah.
The second one I didn't watch. I'll be honest.
I didn't either.
I never got a chance to watch. I'll tell you what I do want to watch. Just a quick spin off of that. Speaking of the second one, I didn't watch the second Ghostbusters. Did not watch it. Will not watch it. What I am looking forward to the next one.
Oh, with the kids?
With the kids.
Yeah. So that was supposed to come out this past summer, but because of COVID, they just held on to it. They're like, let's wait.
It looked awesome when I saw the preview for that.
Yeah.
Because you made me go look for Boss Fight.
Yeah, Boss Fight.
So I watched that, and when I watched that, it
boss
led me
level,
to,
boss level,
boss level, boss level.
Yeah.
So I watched that after, because first you told me to watch a tiny map of perfect little things, and
I have now
map of tiny perfect little things.
Yeah, something like that.
I've now accepted that that might be my new favorite thing of all things other than Star Wars.
Yeah.
So when you told me to watch Boss Level, I watched the preview for it, and it looked really awesome, by the way. I can't wait to see that. But then I didn't pay attention because I was cooking, and I let YouTube just kind of go to the next thing, and it went to a preview of all the, like, John Wick 4 coming. And there's John Wick 4 coming where they're after coming. They're coming for him. The whole group.
The whole syndicate.
The whole syndicate's coming for him. I think I saw like $14 million bounty on his head. But no, so then that led me to the next one. And one of them that popped up was the next Ghostbusters, and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
They brought back Ecto.
Yeah. It looks great. It really looks great. I've seen previews on it. It looks awesome. Like I said, they had it ready for the summer, but they sidelined it.
See, I didn't even know that. I thought I didn't know they had it ready for last summer. I'd not even heard about it.
Yeah. Aykroyd, he apparently was a consultant for it, and I guess has a lot to do with it. He was on Rogan over a year ago talking about Crystal Skull Vodka, and he was also mentioning the reboot of the start of the Ghostbusters, and he was saying how the story was going to advance and things that they'd worked on. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun. So the other day you did call me and you're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm watching a Korean science fiction film. And you're like, of course you are. I do want to talk about this one little thing though, because it is actually good, and I didn't expect it to be good. It's called Space Sweepers.
Space Sweepers.
Sweepers, like sweepers. You sweep, you know, with a broom.
Okay.
And it's a Korean science fiction film. It's on Netflix. It's when you start watching it, you're like, what the hell am I watching? I mean, because they're flying around in these really interesting spaceship things, but they're cleaning up space debris to try and make money. And then they get into a storyline. And the idea, like, when I first started watching it, I was thinking, who thinks up this crap? And I went, oh, I could probably think up this crap. Yeah, I get it now. Because, I mean, the story is great, okay? The characters are really cool. There's nothing about it that sucks. Like, I kept wanting to hate on it. And the whole time I was watching it, I was like, this is delightful.
Wow.
So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. It is worth watching. If you like science fiction stuff, it's pretty cool. So just saying. I did watch The History of Swear Words. It's not that great. Nicolas Cage, I guess, is the host. Each episode's like 20 minutes long. It is interesting to hear why they came up, how words develop and how they become things, but it's sort of like they tried to make a panel show where they were allowed to curse the entire time, and it was a bunch of comedians commenting on it. It wasn't great. Outlander season 4 came out on Netflix. I guess it's originally on Showtime. And I think on Showtime, they're on like season 7 or something like that. I talked about Outlander years ago. This woman is living in like 1940s, and she touches these Stonehenge looking things, and she goes back in time. And when she comes to, she's in like 1800 Scotland, and they're in the middle of a revolution. And the guy that looks like her then husband ends up being the bad guy, and she has to get away from him before she's raped. And then she ends up falling in love with this guy who's like a revolutionary. And then there's this weird thing of her. She actually touches the stones later on and goes back to the future. And the guy that was her husband's like, oh, thank God you're here. And meanwhile, he's like, he looks exactly like the guy who has tormented her the entire time she's been in the past. And she's like, she's torn because she's like, I loved you before I left, but also you look like the enemy now. And I just like, it was a weird juxtaposition. And she was pregnant from the other dude in the past baby when she comes forward. So he ends up helping raise this baby that's not his. And in season 4, she goes back at the end of season 3. In season 4, the daughter goes back. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, it's just, it's a crazy show. I don't know the right way to give it the praise that it deserves. But yeah. It's good. It's really good.
I vaguely remember you talking about that because I think that was the same episode that you talked about the movie Dark or the show Dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I vaguely remember you talking about Outlander.
I still say Dark is one of the best shows I've ever seen. I want to go back and watch it again in German and read the English subtitles. I mean, it melted my brain. Dark is a brain melter.
Yeah, I don't need that.
I'm just like, yeah. Dark.
You said there were so many characters that like trans, like both sides and back and forth. It was like a string, like the string kind of.
Yes, there's so much time travel in Dark that it's
hard to follow.
It's hard to follow, but it's also, you almost need a theoretical physicist with you to explain some of the stuff. You're like, and then have like a board behind you with strings and pictures. And this person's dad, and this person's mom. But these people are actually brother and sister. And this person's actually uncle and grandfather. And you're like, what? This is basically granddaughter of this one, but they have a kid and they have to have that relationship for this kid to be with that person. And you're like,
I mean, it's a great marketing plan. You've got a show that you got to watch 2 or 3 times just to know what's going on. So, you know, you get the eyeballs on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy to follow. Dark is not easy to follow. Yeah. So
anything else you watched?
Cartoon? You know, like cartoons, right? So everyone likes cartoons. Spies in Disguise came out to the theaters during COVID, and of course nobody went to the theater to watch it, but it was Will Smith's cartoon thing of him being a spy who gets turned into a pigeon. And
I did see the preview for that. Actually,
it's actually pretty cute. It's a cute little cartoon. It's on HBO Max. I was like flipping, I'd watch something real serious and I was like, I need something to decompress. And I turned that on and I was like, oh, this is actually kind of cute. Yeah.
Tom and Jerry supposed to be coming out soon.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time. Yeah, looking forward to that. I know what I watched that got me real depressed. Unorthodoxed.
Do what?
It's on Netflix. It was a miniseries. It's based on a real story. A woman wrote a book about it, about how she left the Orthodox Jewish faith in was it Westminster? Westchester. So, you know, there's Orthodox Jews that have this very secluded life of following the word, and like they have their little hair that grows into locks, and the women all have to, there's a lot of rules and a lot of obeying, a lot of, you have to do this because this is what the faith says and blah, 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 blah. And this story is about a woman who tried to escape. And it was depressing. Like when it was over, yeah. It was over. I had to watch a cartoon. So,
oh, okay. That's how you, so that was the depressing part. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I when I lived in New York, actually Westchester, I don't know if it's the exact same, if it was the Pennsylvania Westchester or it was New York Westchester, but there were a lot of Orthodox Jews up that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, their big thing is, you know, replenish the population. 6 million were killed. And so they were trying to live upon their faith. And it's a very strict portion of the religion that not everybody follows. It's sort of like having a very strict version of the Catholic faith, you know, at the Vatican, or a very strict version of the Christian faith. If you have who are those people? What's the name of the Christian group that's always banning everybody's funerals? And you know what I'm talking about, right?
No, I'm not sure about that. I think of Amish when I think of Hasidic. I mean Orthodox Jews. I think more of an Amish kind of style.
Well, you know, the way they look.
Well, yeah. Not just that, but like the way they kind of shun all of, like, you know, most of, like, you know, current world and you know, technologies, yeah. And stuff like that.
Yeah. But it's all about rules, and it's all about following the rules, and everything's, you know, God just judging you kind of thing. But it is an interesting look behind the curtain of something that's not everybody sees. I know some people who grew up Jewish that talk about it, and they said that it was pretty accurate from what they observed from the Orthodox group. I actually used to know someone really well who grew up as in the Jewish faith, and she was saying that there was a lot of things that were positive and a lot of things that were negative, especially being like a woman who is moving up in society in today's world. It was kind of frowned upon that women actually had a voice, or I don't know. It was weird. It was a weird time. Weird stuff going on. And this isn't weird to them. This is their faith. This is what they believe.
Right.
I get that. But it is so different from what we know. So it is. You know, it's sort of like watching Fargo back in the day when everybody's like, oh my God, have you seen Fargo? They talk so funny. It's like the only thing people could talk about was the fact that they talked funny. I was like, yeah, they talk funny if you don't live there. If you live there, you're like, what am I watching? It's like us watching that Hillbillyology and people going, man, can you believe them? And it's like, I know those people. Like, those are my people. I'm related to those people. I have those people.
I have family members that are those people.
Right. It's sort of like that scene in The Matrix where the guy goes, we have levels of survival you don't even want to accept. And I'm like, I know that level. and I did watch something really funny. Chris Rock redid his tambourine special on Netflix. He sort of makes a joke about it being, it's not a new special. It's a reshowing of the old special, but the stuff you didn't see. And so it's a lot of him just talking to the crowd and kind of mulling over his ideas. And it's hilarious. Like, it's really hilarious. It's way better than the tambourine special that he put out. He really talks about his divorce in this, and he talks about, you know, being from South Carolina and, you know, coming up with a family and becoming successful and, you know, having a wife and kids and making a mistake and cheating on her and getting caught and, you know, having to go through the divorce. And he's like,
well, he talked a little bit about that in Tambourine, but I didn't know that they did a behind the scenes kind of.
Oh yeah. He does more talking to the camera. There's more cutaways of him not in the comedy special itself. And there's, you know, he's like talking to him and he's like, I'm sitting there and I'm realizing that my lawyer's there, her lawyers are there. There's a team of lawyers on both sides. There's the stenographer, there's the judge, there's all the people that are, you know, security, and there's, you know, the bailiff, and there's, and I'm paying for everybody's salary. Like all these, he's like, I barely finished school, and all these people are here because I'm successful. He yep. goes, that's when I realized I made it. but it's good. He did talk about a few things that he didn't in the special that I thought made it that much better. So it's worth watching.
Okay. I mean, I watched Tambourine. Yeah. It was good. It's still no Bigger or Blacker or what's the other one?
Bring the Pain.
Bring the Pain. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
So after he came out with the Blacker tour, he came up with a book, and I read his book then. It was really good. He talks a lot about the shorthand of being a black man, even as successful as he was. He says that, you know, Adam Sandler is his best friend, and he said the difference is Adam Sandler can show up to Saturday Night Live studios wearing a hoodie and sweatpants, and he gets greeted at the door. Hey, Adam, let me get the door for you. I can show up in a suit and they say ID. And he's like, I'm Chris Rock. I'm like, you need to see ID. Yeah. And he's like, still? Like, and he goes, still. But that was, I think that book was written in the mid 90s. So, I mean,
yeah, it was when he first kind of got on to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
He was just kind of coming into his own.
Right. It's probably a lot different now. I mean, especially when you're that level of fame and that level of money, I imagine that you show up with an entourage and people are awaiting you. Like, you call ahead and say, by the way, I'm coming up there today. Be ready.
Yeah. I'm sure the book story that he's talking about was when he, like I said, when he first started out and got into Saturday Night Live, and he was a new cast member.
Yeah.
And they were like, we don't know who you are yet. You know, even though Adam Sandler was still kind of new as well.
Well, and he credits Adam Sandler with, you know, the fact that Adam really believed that if anybody helps you along the way, bring them along on your ride. Like, if you become successful, bring everybody.
Right.
And he said, and he's done that. He's done that for everybody he's ever had any interaction with.
That's why I love Adam Sandler movies. I mean, he always, the Grown Ups series, I mean, there's so many people that he just brings along with him, and they do a great job together.
Yeah. The old guy that was in The Waterboy with the Cajun talk.
Yeah.
Okay, so that guy, he had been in Vietnam in the Marine Corps, and when he got out, like, he really wanted to try and make it as a comedian and as an actor, and he tried to go out for a couple of things, and he said that they actually went out for a movie together, and he said this was Adam's first movie that he'd ever gone out for, and Adam ended up getting it. I think it was for, maybe it was Billy Madison, or maybe it was some movie that he went up for. No, it was for Saturday Night Live. He was trying to be a cast member on Saturday Night Live. Okay. And he asked the guy, he said, you got any advice for me? And he said, and I gave him some advice, and he said, thanks. And he said, and he started asking me about myself and, you know, history and whatnot. And he said, and we both made it on that season. He said, I didn't make it past one season, but Adam kept on. He said, but from then on, like, he told me, he's like, you know, I want to keep in touch. He said, and he's put me in every single thing he's ever done. And that's just the kind of guy he is. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So, you know, it all goes back to Snoop. Ain't no fun unless your friends have some. Did you get to watch the thing of the Two Bears, One Cave where Bert calls Snoop on the phone and they talk to him on the air?
I listened to part of it. I didn't get to watch all of it. I kind of sped through the end because it was kind of long with they were just sitting there talking. But at the end is when they called Snoop.
Yeah, like during the last 45 minutes, they were talking about doing the Super Bowl live show with Warren Sapp.
With Warren Sapp, right.
Yeah, and apparently Bert and Warren have kept in touch, and Warren in his retirement really, really enjoys scuba fishing. Like, he's from Tampa, you know, it was no big deal, you know, no big story, though, apparently, that he played for Miami. He got drafted by the Bucks. I mean, he was a beast on the field, but on his off time, he really loved to learn to scuba, and he learned to fish, and he loves fishing and scuba diving, and he does it like every day. And so,
well, that was when Bert learned how to do that during that, October kind of thing, right?
Well, no, they had done a thing for Trip Flip where they had to ride, Bert the Conqueror, where he had to ride roller coasters and scream like a little girl. So they had him on a thing where they had done something with the NFL a long time ago when he was on Bert the Conqueror. And so he had met Warren Sapp then, and he called up Warren and asked him if he wanted to come ride these roller coasters with him while he was in Tampa. And Warren was like, yeah, absolutely. And they apparently closed the park and let the two of them ride everything. And so everything that they did that day, they just had a ball doing. And, you know, Warren was like, listen, anytime you want to hang out, we'll do anything. And so they pitched each other shows. They hung out. They had a great time. So then, because of the popularity of Two Bears, One Cave and Tom Segura running this thing like a boss, you know, they got into talking about doing a live event, and they were like, I wonder if Warren would do the live event. He's from Tampa. They had the Super Bowl in Tampa. This would be really cool. So they did that. And apparently they went fishing, they hung out, but he gets the idea of calling Snoop on the line. And he's like, I wonder if Snoop would go with us. Snoop loves to go fishing. And he was like, call him up, see what he says. So they called him up and had the conversation on the air, and Snoop's like, yeah, but I'll be down for that. That'd be great. You know, and he like compliments Bert and everything. And Bert like hangs up the phone, and you can see like, he's like 10 years old in his face. Like he's just like,
we just talked to Snoop on the phone, and like, we've got Warren Sapp on. He's like, I'm living the greatest life.
I'm living my dream. This is my best life. You know, he's like, in 91, I'm listening to Snoop. I'm watching Warren Sapp play football. I'm in Tampa. I'm in college, you know, on my whatever year. He's like, and now you can tell me I have these guys' phone numbers and they'll call me back. And he's like, that's it. This is best podcast ever. He's like, I love that though. I love the joy of it. Like it's one of those things. Like you talk about when you're a fan of somebody, you want them to succeed. You want them to do well. And when they finally do, you're like, all right, that's great, man. I've been in your corner for a long time. So it's pretty cool.
Well, now the big ones are supposed to be starting coming up soon, right?
The big ones.
Isn't that the name of the show that Bert and Snoop are doing?
Oh, the Big Show. The Go Big Show.
Is it Go Big Show? I thought it was called The Big Ones.
Yeah, it's on TBS. It's been on. Yeah. Greg says he's watching it. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was on already. I thought they were getting ready to release it.
Yeah, The Go Big Show. It came out January 6th, I think, was the first date. Or January 17th, something like that. January was their first dates.
I have to look that up then, because I knew it was coming out, but I thought it was being released later.
Rosario Dawson's on it, and Cody Rhodes, which is Dusty Rhodes' son.
I know who Cody. I still watch wrestling occasionally, so I know who Cody Rhodes was.
Yeah,
Goldust.
Yeah, so they're on there. You know, and Rosario, she apparently had a great time, but also had some interactions with Bert where he was just an idiot, and she was like, she's like, I dig the fact that you're doing this. Okay, so there's a weird tie-in here between Rosario and Bert, and Bert and Bill Burr, and then Bill Burr and Rosario with the Mandalorian series. Could we see Bert in the Mandalorian?
Uh-oh.
As like a Jabba the Hutt, you know?
Oh, if you
character in the background.
If you get Bert in the Mandalorian or in Ahsoka, you're gonna flip your lid.
I could see him being like one of the shady characters who's just walking around and not being a character, just being himself. Yeah. But like put on this, you know, funky hat and a cigar, and he's like talking crap to somebody and just being silly. I could see him being worked into that. I mean, that would be seamless.
And Burr makes a return.
Burr is definitely going to be back. Burr is a constant professional no matter what he does. I mean, whether it's comedy or acting, like he takes the acting seriously and he's done a great job. The King of Staten Island, I was really impressed with his acting. I mean, but I mentioned that during the Mandalorian, like during season one, he was the best actor of the whole series. Like it was good. You really bought him as being that guy. I mean,
yeah, well, that was probably the reason why he got the return visit.
Yeah. And I mean, in season two, like if you assess everybody's character and how they acted and everything, him, Timothy Oliphant, Rosario Dawson, and Katie Sackhoff, probably the five, including Bill Burr, probably the five best actors on the show. Just saying. I mean, actors. Like
I know what you mean.
There is that moment where I define actor as you stop thinking about them being that person and you
think of them as that
celebrity.
Part, right?
Yeah. Like Matthew McConaughey, there's very few times where you don't go, all right, when you see Matthew McConaughey on the screen. But him and Dallas Buyers Club, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Or him and what's the one on HBO, True Detectives?
Oh, I watched the first season. Chrissy loves it. I watched the first season.
You only need to watch the first season. That's the only one he's in. True Detectives, man, his portrayal in that is bonkers. I mean, you stop watching Matthew McConaughey and you're like, this dude has a serious past. Like you watch him in that role, you're like, dang, man. Yeah. It's awesome. And him in Mud. He was great in Mud.
I didn't see Mud.
Mud was good. Mud was better than I thought it would be. Mud to me is like someone had a project and they called in a favor and they were like, hey, listen, I know we go way back. Would you mind reading the script? And he was like, I could do that for you. He just shows up. You're like, damn, you nailed it out of the park, man. This is awesome. But Mud's good. Mud's good for Mud. To me, Mud, you would like Mud. To me, Mud ties into the latchkey kid in me that is left alone a lot.
Okay.
These boys run up upon a stranger. It's they're in like the bayou, so they have a boat instead of a bicycle, you know, kind of deal. And they run up across a stranger who tells them these fantastical stories that may or may not be true. And okay. these kids have an interaction with him that's bigger than life. And it's, there is a bit of that. I could see myself in that scenario kind of thing. And you probably would too. You'd probably be like, I want a hug or something, man. I know. Cause that's how I felt. Same thing with that 90s. What was the one 90s kids Jonah Hill did?
Superbad?
No. I was talking about it a while back and you were like, I got to check that out. 90s. It was like 90s something. The hell was it? I wrote notes. I just don't remember when I watched it. Where have you watched this that's different?
I haven't watched a lot because I've been working so much. That's my thing. I really don't get a lot of time to watch things.
You know what? Why don't I use my phone and look it up?
Well, that's what I was about to do, but I figured you'd probably do it better because you know it's... Because I'll just look up Jonah Hill.
Movies, 90s. It's called Mid-90s.
Mid-90s, okay. I don't remember us talking about that one.
So... 1990s Los Angeles, 13-year-old spends his summer navigating between troubled home life and a crew of new friends he meets at a skate shop. They skateboard.
Okay.
It's good. It's good stuff. Mid-90s. Yeah. But again, left to your own devices. You know, he's got an older brother that kicks his ass every time he sees him. He doesn't want to be at his house. His mom's divorced and running through a bunch of men. And... He finds a group of skaters to hang out with, and they're all broken in their own special way, and they become friends that are bigger than his family.
Well, and we weren't skaters, but we were a broken group.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Me on, we all meshed together because we were all broken in a different way.
Yeah.
And we've stayed together for life.
That's why that, you know, Greg hates on Ed Sheeran. Yeah, Ed Sheeran. But he's got that song, Castle in the Hill. And one of the lines is talking about his friends. They've all grown up and they're all different. And he's like, but these people, they raised me, is the line. And every time I hear it, I get teary-eyed. I'm getting teary-eyed right now talking about it. You know. But it's the truth.
Love you, brother.
Love you too, man.
Love you, Greg. Johnny, Josh, Pete, Wes, all
of
you.
Let's wrap this up for now. We're right at about an hour now. We have a bonus for everybody wanting to stick around. We're going to do one later on with Greg. So stick around for that. looking forward to watching another episode of WandaVision. Hopefully I don't know if they're going to end it at 7 or go to 8. They don't really tell you how many they're going to go until they're just like, we're done. And you're like, wait, what? So I'm hoping there's more. Although if they ended it right now, it's a perfect cliffhanger. You'd
it's
be like,
perfect.
I
perfect.
Can't believe that's it. You know?
I mean, if they decide not to do another one this season, it is a perfect time to do it.
But we wouldn't find out until the following Friday.
I want more now.
Yeah. We wouldn't find out until the following Friday when it's just not there. You'd be like, come on, Disney. Like, so anyway, I'm going to wrap this up for now. Thank you to everybody for listening. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, share with your friends. If you want to be part of the podcast, let me know. We got the website, stuffiheard.com. Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Take care.
You got it, brother.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
You want to do it?
Cue that cow.